You're listening to a podcast on the Audio Boom Network. This is A Mindful Life with me, Dave Thomas. Thank you for downloading this edition of the program. I do hope you enjoy it. Hari Buddha and Krishna Thapa were born not only in the mountains of Nepal, but of them. Enduring a level of physical hardship during their childhoods, many of us would find hard to comprehend, they became one of the select few to join the Royal Gurkha Rifles. Krishna went on to become the first Gurkha to pass selection for the Special Air Service and spent the next 19 years in operations around the world before becoming their mountain troop leader. He is now a world-class mountaineer and has led many expeditions. Hari saw service in Afghanistan, and in 2010 he stepped on an IED which resulted in him losing both his legs above the knee. Although going through some dark days, Hari's spirit and resilience got him through, together with the love of his family and friends, and he's now an ambassador for the disabled, challenging stigma in his own country and successfully overturning a ban the Nepalese government had placed on amputees climbing Everest. Perhaps it was only a matter of time and destiny before Krish and Hari's paths crossed. In 2023, they will be climbing Mount Everest. Hari will be the first double amputee to do so. It will test both of them to their physical and mental limits. So join us now in the ice-covered mountains of the Brecon Beacons, having just come down from Penavan, a mountain well known to Special Forces and which Hari used for a training walk with the support of the Curtis Palmer Programme. Krishna and Hari, a very warm welcome to A Mindful Life. You join us in a very snowy Brecon Beacons, not too dissimilar, I suppose, to the foothills of Nepal. Both of you were born and raised in that country, and perhaps many of us in the West won't appreciate how hard some of aspects of life were. I'd be grateful if you could describe your childhoods and how that later shaped you into the men that you are today.
Thank you, mate. I was born in a cow shed around 2,700 meters. I went to school barefoot, didn't have a pen and paper, and, you know, I learned how to read and write on wooden plank with a chalk stone. We didn't have any, even, you know, commercial chalks. So that's how it was. My school was about primary school up to the village, then I have to go a day walk, and I have to stay there for, you know, secondary school. Then after that is 6 and 7, then I have to go to another school, again, same distance. So, yeah, that's how I failed a couple of times. But I was the first person to pass, GCSE level of equivalent, which is called SLC in Nepal. I was the first person to pass from that village. You know,
well, that was one of many achievements in your life then.
Yeah, I think the hardship, before we go to school, we have to wake up 5:30 and go to, walk in the field before we go to school. Once you come back to school, it's not about doing homework. You just have some snack and go to the field and work with, your cattle, so in the field. And, you know, that's how it was, you know. When I joined the Gurkhas, I think, when we were digging a trend, man, and I have done so many times, the boys who came from cities, right? They're struggling. By the time, we have already, dug trends out, and we already had our meal and killing our rifles and just ready to bed while others are still digging.
Krish, does this sound a familiar story to you?
Absolutely. I think, first of all, thank you, Dave, for this great opportunity for Hari and myself to be, coming on your podcast. And especially for, thank you for today, walking up in a penny fan where the fan then start. And actually, just give me the opportunity to reflect who we are and actually we come from mountain. And just realizing the life in a mountain. And I think normally we forget, when we are in comfortable position ourselves, and then just reflecting us, our childhood and the life to understand, and maybe compare ourselves, how privileged to be here, sharing the room with you and Hari. Inside the near life.
Well, I never thought I'd be sharing a bedroom with two Gurkhas, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's actually a pretty similar story. You know, all the traditional culture and ritual. Yeah.
Now, you've both have many things in common. Both of you were soldiers in the Royal Gurkha Rifles, which, for people that don't know, is an elite fighting regiment within the British Army, renowned, in fact. Unfortunately, Harry, you fell victim to an IED where you lost both legs above your knee. Krishna, you became the first Gurkha to pass selection and become a member of the Special Air Service. Harry, perhaps if you could you just tell us about that day the explosion happened and your subsequent recovery?
First of all, it's a great privilege to serving in a brigade of Gurkhas. It's very few people we get chance to serve. So it's a great, great privilege. On that day, it was 17 April 2010. We were just deployed to Afghanistan, and it was very early days of the operation. And on that day, there was two missions that we want. One is to give security to two engineers so they can go and rekey the well, so they can later they can repair and local people can have water. And second one was we're just quite new in that area, so just to familiarize the area. So there's a two in that. And it was about 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's not suited, isn't it? It's a booted completely, you know, and we are 20 in squad, I was 10th, we're all in single file. The front guys were clear, you know, they had a balloon to detect the bombs, anything that they had, you know, they can find, and we're just walking. Very small part. The 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. It was very hot, sunny day, and we passed a couple of compounds and some irrigation ditches and some poppy fields. And we're just walking at this, you know, side of the poppy field, and suddenly went bang, and you know, my left hand in a split second, I couldn't see my right legs straight away. My left leg was there, but it was just dangling in bone and skins. My right arm also injured, so I couldn't able to move. My friends came up, passed me up, called the heli, and evacuated me to Kambasan. And I'm very grateful for all those who saved my life and gave me opportunity to relive my life.
Obviously, there would be some dark days, I suppose, since that happened in your recovery, where perhaps you questioned yourself and things around you, I suppose.
Yes, I thought that my last life is just finished. I thought that I'm gonna, you know, live rest of my life on a holy chair, and I would need a carer rest of my life. That's what I thought. I also thought about whether my wife was going to stick with me, and you know, she did, and she always, you know, stood on my side and supported me, supported the children. So yeah, I lost completely confidence. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was very uneducated about disability. So this is why all the climb things that I do is to make awareness about the disability around the world. So whatever happens, life hasn't finished. We can be a successful, we can spend a happy life, you know, we can spend a meaningful life, you know. Maybe my legs might be my weakness, but it doesn't mean that I can't do anything. And maybe some other people have they have got a weakness of maybe eye or hands, or there might be something else. But I think we should focus on our strength, not in our weaknesses. We learn from what we've been through and, you know, live for the future. And also we can live for not just for us, but for our next generations, because whatever we are having right now is somebody has given their time, effort, invested their money, and they challenge themselves. That's why we are privileged to have these facilities. We're sitting in a warm room because somebody has, you know, gone through and challenged themselves and designed, built this. That's so you can have it. So whatever it is, whatever clothes we are wearing, the foods that we are eating, the technology that we are using, somebody challenged themselves passionately so that we are having it. So hopefully some of my challenges will teach something for life, technology, innovations, And maybe some other bits as well to our next generations.
I remember you saying at the recent fundraiser event in Streatley, people with disabilities and you lost your legs above the knee. In the culture that you've come from, that's seen as a punishment from perhaps a previous life. And that's something I hadn't even thought of. And I'm just wondering the stigma that you may have faced yourself as a result of losing your legs.
Yeah, I'm very privileged to living in this country where supported, and also I think 2012 Paralympic made massive awareness about disability as well. You know, some of, not just Nepal, but many countries around the world will think that, you know, disability is seen of previous life. Once you get disabled and will think that, you know, you're a burden of the earth, you know. I thought myself that way because this is the culture that I grew up, right? But when I was doing it, challenging myself and learning my life again, it wasn't the case. And when you're looking at how many people has a disability around the world, it's massive. You know, it's about 12 to 15% of disabled people live in the world. That is about a billion of us. You know, we can't control this. It's like a nature. So somebody might just walking on the road and just fall down and maybe bump their head on us somewhere on the floor, and they might be sit on a wheelchair for the rest of their life. Maybe some are doing the sports, some are doing the adventure, maybe some are climbing mountain or whatever it is they are doing what they love to do. And they were, one of my friends, we were sharing the rooms in the army. So he woke up next day and he is living the rest of his life on a wheelchair. We can't control that. The one thing we can do is we can discuss things, learn things from each other and try to live our life as the best possible way.
Well, we were up Penavan earlier today, weren't we? We were pretty choppy conditions. I think you were the only man that wasn't slipping around on the ice, or everybody else was. Krish, as I mentioned earlier, you were a member of the Special Air Service for 19 years, I think, rising to the rank of a warrant officer and became the mountain troop leader, training your fellow SAS colleagues. You're a world-class mountaineer and have led many expeditions around the world. I'm fascinated to know what draws you to the mountains and how you were eventually hooked up with Harry.
Thank you, Dave. I think our life is a service. So many ways we see, either we look into deep enough or not, because we had no choice where to born, what to do. And it's everything is the surrounding conditioning and, you know, either the culture, community or academic education or the job we do. So just going on, one of the first from Royal Gurkha Rifles to join in the regiment. You know, sometimes we just have to follow our gut instinct, and then you didn't realize when you are a good guy, you've been given the responsibility, deserve more than what you think, I think, in our life. That's probably what happened to me. If I never thought, you know, I will be in that position, but in a life, if once we have open mind and open heart, I think the opportunity come to us and we have to just accept and roll with it. Yeah, it's been great privilege and honor, and the working with the guys around the world, to be honest, that's one of the reasons who I am. And it gave me, saved my whole life in different dimensions, understanding the, you know, what's life about. And more than anything, once you understand ourselves, so though we can thrive, whatever service we're doing, we can give more than what our body and mind can actually thrive. So yeah, and during that process, obviously, I've been very privileged, honored to lead the Gurkhas and UKSF Mount Everest Expedition 2015/17. During that process, Harry and I met up in one of the cultural events, and then, you know, then we end up here after 5-6 years. The great thing is, like this day today, you know, pen with pen, we have quite a lot more training have had happen over the years, and then we are very confident, and his training and mental and then the physical and all the training fundamental, and we are pretty much all set for next year. Yeah, and then it's great honor to be, you know, part of this great project, and so do you, you know, Curtis Palmer, and then all these guys working with us. And it's been actually, you know, sometime that's why, you know, small thing led to this great cause, and it's great to see you guys and come in here in your time, Dave, and we are very honored and privileged. Thank you.
It's odd, isn't it, that the tribe finds you? If you'd have said to me 3 years ago that we'd be doing this interview.
Say bye-bye.
Oh, right. No worries.
Is that okay?
No, it's fine. No worries.
Matt, come on. What's that? Yeah. Harry. See you in Nepal.
Yeah,
April.
The stealthy arrival of your friends. So you mentioned the Everest exhibition. In 2023, next year, both of you will be attempting to summit Mount Everest. Harry, you will be the first double amputee to do so. So how's the training going? And I know it sounds an obvious question, but were there any obstacles unique to your expedition that you've had to overcome?
Definitely, our training is going very well. And this is part of the training as well for me. This is the coming in that rain and slippery ice. That's also great. I never thought about I would climb this much of mountain because there was a ban on Everest. The COVID popped in.
It's just worth mentioning, wasn't it, that the Nepalese government banned amputees, and disabled people from going to Everest. You managed to campaign and overturn that ban.
Yes. So they banned double amputees and visually impaired. So, we went to Supreme Court in Nepal and overturned that rule. We tried initially through diplomatic way, but it is going to take it ages and possibly would never be overturned. So, I think it was just ridiculous that you can't ban the people just because they are some kind of category, right? If you say about other challenges, definitely I have challenges on prosthetics because there's no double above knee amputee climbing that high mountain. So I need to design the crampon. Everybody's sleeping was off the road and I was walking the road.
You're going to be the first and nobody has designed for this problem before, have they? But you must have been something right because like you say, you were the only one that wasn't sleeping around.
Yeah, so you know, so we found a way to climb. So we have designed some of the crampons. We have also designed some of the heating circuits that, you know, I can't able to afford to lose more limbs. So make sure I don't get frostbite. And that's the main aim. And prosthetic is one of the biggest, challenges that I have. The problem with this, many people who don't believe that I can able to do that. You know, it's like, when Wright brothers said that, yeah, we're going to fly. And nobody, they thought that they were maybe mad at that time. So it's kind of how it is. And also another challenge is simply fundraising. And I'm very, very privileged and to get supported from Curtis Palmer Program, ACE, and everyone that start coming here and supporting, so which is great. And at the moment, we're doing very well. Yeah, there's other challenges that I have got. There are lots of stigma, there's mountain politics and so many things that I need to deal. But, you know, if I need to do it, then I have to deal that. And by doing so, hopefully we'll create history. And I think this would be one of the pretty good human endeavors that first double above knee amputee is on the top of the Everest. So that would be great. Great. I think everybody would love that.
Krish, you've led many expeditions, I suppose, in your time throughout the world. Was there any particular problems or issues that you're going to have to address on your ascent on Everest in 23?
Yes, I think absolutely, because the challenges and the physical and mental weakness and strength always there. I think the important thing what I learned over the years is not saying danger is not there. It's not saying the weather is not going to change. But I think important thing is how we overcome that. I think number one is obviously what I find is the mental attitude or character. And that is a great asset I think Harry have. Otherwise, obviously, if anyone think in normal kind of, let's say conscious level, how are you going to think? If you look at the body and then the mind, straight away, a lot of people think it's not going to happen. But important thing is the character he have and then the person he wants to be. I think that's very important. So that's the biggest strength. In terms of fundamental climbing, like camp and then the weathers, our experience over the years, the way we're looking at is the ordinary way is that there will be always shit camp and then the shit people are shit thing doing in a shit time, yes. Time frame. But the way we're thinking is, why don't the camp and then the condition make for us? That's the one unique way of, I think, we kind of evolving ourselves. Mm. Probably no one has done that way. So we're thinking about actually on the way up today on the penny, a lot of guys are asking, right? Or, you know, everyone is asking, obviously, you know, you can't, how can you meet up the time frame? How can we meet up the camp or in time? But what we're saying is maybe camp and time has to meet up us, not we walking around. So that's the way. And then, you know, like all our team and, you know, like putting together the, you know, like kind of process of climbing that way rather than the other way. So, yeah, that's probably the strength. And then, like I say, of course, danger will always there. It's just the, how can we mitigate that through our process of the, you know, like planning and execution.
That very nicely brings me on to the final question. And I couldn't help noticing today when we're up climbing up towards the summit, you're like a pair of teenagers. You're laughing, laughing and giggling. And obviously, your love of the mountains came through. And, you know, I was lucky enough to chat with you both briefly at that fundraising event in Streatley. You know, it's fair to say you're probably the two hardest men I've ever met, physically and mentally. But as I found out, you're also two of the most humble and reflective human beings. And those are very different qualities. And I'm curious, with your military backgrounds as elite soldiers, how that world and your views of the world and nature and everything around you, they're two very different views. And I'm curious as to how they sit side by side.
Yeah, but I think you know, Chris is completely different character and I'm completely different character. But I think thing is, you know, many people, we all have different perceptions, different character, different mentality. In the way we see is different in so many ways. But I think the main thing is make sure we respect each other's, perception. Because I think lots of things is, I think, even let's say there's a war happening in Ukraine now. And the West, we see it differently. And the Russians, they see completely different way. So I think the reason why we're fighting there is simply we don't respect each other and each other's view, I think. You know, that same thing happens in the family, right? Yes. things happen in on everything. And but also something, if you can work that one together, then it's good assets. You know, in the business as well, business world that I have been, is actually, you know, if you have the same skill, same quality, it actually doesn't work, you know? But if you have different character, different mentality, and you combine it together, it gives different perspective on that. And that is the way Chris and I work. So he thinks his experience of the, you know, special forces, mountain training skills, and I bring it like a disability, how I suffered, and you know, these are the things that I bring it together, and how can together manage this thing to make things successful. So this is, I think, I looked at
Krish.
I think it's a very profound question. I think for me it's like, we can only see the reflection if the water is still. And if the water is same water is, you know, unstable and wavering and effect with the outer space, like in wind, when we couldn't see something, they just absorb too much. If you're looking at your question, it's regardless, you know, we in our sensory world, we think we are strong, strength. But I think at the end of the day, everything starts from silence and quiet. How silenced we are, I think nature, being a mom, being a teacher, you know, whatever job we're doing, or being elite force, end of the day, everything has to be a reflection of themselves or ourselves. So that's the very, I think, deep down, I see the world. Regardless, we are not different. You know, like we say, normal 90% of people listen, have a communication with the body and mind, but not like being, you know, how we being today, and no one have and communicate that way. That's probably the, you know, kind of indirect answer to you. But having said that, that has to be, it's not no one mistake or no one misunderstanding, because it's the culture, it's the society we grown up right now, and it has a huge effect for all of us. So it's hard to, you know, understand that way, because our mind and conditioning is so much so, isn't it, according to that way we are. Yeah, that's how I think that everyone is being.
And I suppose the one disability we all have is ego. Ego gets in the way of everything.
I think, yes, that is the, you know, like, again, you know, like, that's how we need to learn, you know, to as a whole life, as service, and then to help each other. everyone is struggling so many ways, and some of us need to give our hand, and sometimes we need ask for help as well in so many ways, and that's what we are kind of lacking of in this kind of so-called 21st century. And by doing this project like just today, you know, so many guys come up, and just, you know, if we listen and look, everyone, you know, we are so privileged, honored to be guys coming from, you know, north, south, and support this project. I think that's the only way our humanity and then being us can support each other in the future, and to for the generation to come and learn something about the conscious human being.
I think talking about egos, I think that's the big, pretty much put us down lots of ways. And the way I see it, you know, we all are human beings, and we are, we some ways we are selfish in the way, you know, we are. And I think on that is just what I say is, for me, what a principle I use to put my ego down is, if somebody is higher than me or better than me, knows more than me, then I say, I want to learn from you. I don't want to be jealous, right? I don't want to learn from you. And somebody, I think, maybe who get jealous with me, and maybe I have got something to offer, then they should learn from me. That's the one thing that I would look at. But another thing is, everything is kind of comes in a circle.
Yeah.
And, maybe I might be somewhere else, but tomorrow I might not be in that place. Even looking at the children's, right? Like, they might very little, they might have influence, they might have a power, they're very innocent, and things like that. And make sure we treat them, who are not just children, but anyone that, you know, who slightly not privileged enough, and make sure that, you know, we treat as a humanly ways. And so I expect the same from Lord, who's in a higher level than me. And I think is, we don't know who is going to end up where. We really don't know, right? And those people might be going to be my boss tomorrow, or going to be the world leaders tomorrow. Maybe there might be something, doing great things around the world. So, yeah, we're not going to learn from putting our egos up. So simply is just put the egos down. Just be a human, a nice human guy, and just learn from each other. I think that's what I think.
Well, gentlemen, you're an absolute inspiration, both of you. And I know what you're doing will inspire others that perhaps are in a dark place in their own lives, will see what you're doing and think, do you know what? This guy's doing it. I think I can do something as well. So thank you for your time today. Good luck with your expedition in Everest. Namaste.
Thank you.
Namaste. Thank
you.
Thank you.
You can't not be impressed or moved by Krish and Harry's spirit of adventure and the love of life. Their warmth, humility, and their friendship for each other is infectious. As Harry said, everything we enjoy in modern life is because someone saw a need for it and became passionate to make it happen. And so it is with Krish and Harry. Their passion is to remind us that anything is possible and to treat everyone as sacred until they remember they are. They find their joy in other people's joy. Former Indian Army Chief of Staff Field Marshal Sam Manekshaw once said that if a man says he is not afraid of dying, he is either lying or he is a Gurkha.